In this week's Classical Music According to Yehuda, Alan Chartok and Yehuda Hanani begin a series of conversations about prodigies.
Yehuda Hanani, first of all, thank you so much for doing this series with us. We are so appreciative about
your... It's always a pleasure to be here, Alan.
I've always felt you either have it or you don't. I say that biographically because I'm both a trumpet player, very poor, and a banjo player, and not good enough. But there are people who grab my instrument from me, my trumpet or my banjo, and can play better than me in an hour, and having never played before. So what's that all about?
This is actually what I would like us to explore the next few segments that we have. This phenomenon of the child prodigy, the wunderkind. I have a child psychologist friend who actually says he believes in the theory of the 10,000 hours, he calls it. You take any child at all, from age 3 or 4, and you start a rigorous training in any field, sports, music, math, whatever it is, and you just spend the right number of hours and you get a prodigy. I disagree with him. I think it's very nice, it's very idealistic, it's very American. You know, it's sort of democracy is the number one thing. Everybody can do it. I think reality proves that he is not entirely correct, because we know even in totalitarian countries, China, Russia, they single out these kids right away and they take them out of school and they give them a very special education and put them through tremendous rigorous discipline, preparing them either for the Olympic Games or for the concert stage or for scientific accomplishment or military accomplishment. There is this phenomenon of the genetic phenomenon that, of course, requires a certain support mechanism, requires a certain environment that will stimulate and encourage it. But I would not say everybody can do it. I disagree with that.
I could not agree with you more, Yehuda Hanani. In fact, I know very well that there are people that I know who, look at a piano, a little kid, 3 years old, looks at a piano, begins to pick out tunes, other people can never do. I think you either got it or you don't.
And as I say, it's not just music. I mean, my curiosity is not only the legality of do parents have the right to do that? The child cannot make a decision for himself. So you decide, you take a child and you say, this kid is going to be this or that, or I'm going to... There is a certain question of child abuse. These days we would look at it very carefully.
No, you cannot go out and play, you practice piano.
Right. Or you don't get your dinner until you do this or that. And the other question is, how much good are we doing to those kids later on in life? How many of them will make a successful transition into adulthood? How many of them will become misfits as a result of this robbed childhood?
So what did your parents do with you?
I was not really a child prodigy. I would not. My parents did not allow me to practice beyond 2 hours a day because they wanted me to have a rounded education. I don't really belong exactly in this category. Let's examine this phenomenon, which is fascinating. You know, there is a cellist who died recently, Janos Starker.
It was a big name. Starker.
And as he was aging, he told me once, isn't it funny? Nobody is interested in the music itself. People say, so-and-so is so old and he is still playing. And so-and-so, he is so young and he is already playing.
Right. That's
this
that's
is
great.
Much more fascinating than the music itself. So let me ask you a question, Alan.
Anything.
Let's take you as a parent, okay?
Yeah.
You have a boy.
I do.
He's 5.
Yeah.
And people come to you and they say, this kid has an exceptional talent in music, but in order for him to fulfill this potential, you have to lock him up, make him practice 6-7 hours a day,
yeah,
give him special training, deprive him of a normal childhood. What will be your reaction?
Yeah, sure, let's roll.
I don't believe you.
Right.
I don't believe you.
Of course not. So of course
you would
I
not
never,
do it, you see?
I never had to face that, and of course we wouldn't do it. I don't know. I think a lot depends on whether the kid believes they want to do it.
Okay. I think that's a good answer. The kid has to be in love with it himself.
Yeah.
To be willing to sacrifice. If a child, 5-year-old, can actually have the judgment to do that. But I'm going to take you to an extreme now.
Okay, go ahead.
The same child, people come to you. Now we are just going 100 years back.
Okay.
150 years back. Yeah. And they say to you, this child has an incredible voice.
I see where this is going.
Now, He is going to be a celebrity beyond your belief. I mean, he's going to be the king of the country. But you have to castrate him first. Can you believe that? Parents, 100, 150 years ago in Italy, regularly did that. And they had a good reason.
And these are called the castrati, right?
These are called the castrati. And this is my first example of child prodigy because, again, child had nothing to do with the decision-making here. Parents had to decide to do that.
So their voice didn't change. Is that what the whole
What happens is that the voice remained a child's voice, a soprano voice. As a result of this fussing around with the hormones, they developed a huge chest. They had a piercing, melodious piercing sound, and they could hold a note forever. I know what's on your mind, so I'll tell you before you ask me. They could have an erection, but could not achieve an orgasm. Just as a side. Until the 18th century, women had been forbidden by the Pope to appear on the stage. So the male soprano was it. He was the diva. He reigned supreme, okay? The Sistine Chapel continued to employ castrati, and the public would hiss when a female prima donna took the place of a favorite male soprano.
In what year?
On the second. We're talking about 100 years ago or so. Yeah, until very recently, 150 years ago. They were the rage, and they were the favorites of dukes and popes. As a condition for in a peace treaty, as a condition for the treaty, Queen Christina of Sweden demanded one of these castrati should follow her to Sweden. And what happened is that they went, as we said before, they were singled out. They took a special school with special training, very rigorous training. But once they completed their education, they were allowed every conceivable indulgence, every liberty, every luxury. They lived like royalty. They received palaces as gifts from cardinals, from royalty. And in the role of a female prima donna, they flaunted their jewels, they flaunted their satins, their feathers. A legendary one was Farinelli. And King Philip V of Spain took him to his court, and he became the king's confidant. He rose to the rank of a minister. It really was a coveted career, and parents were willing to do it. Times have changed. One of the last ones is on record with us today. He was the last castrati ever, and he's singing Ave Maria. His name was Alessandro Mareschi. Now, in spite of the primitive quality of the recording industry, it's really the beginning of recording history, you can still get a glimpse of this phenomenon. And I am sure that everybody in the audience, or among our listeners, would very much appreciate it. So there is the last castrato, I should say, singing Ave Maria.
Thank you.
The Last Castrato, Alessandro Moreschi, performing Ave Maria. Before that, Alan Chartok speaking with cellist Yehuda Hanani. To learn about Yehuda's Close Encounters with Music series in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, visit cewm.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.